The Fake Show podcast is sponsored by the law firm of Hutchison & Steffen, North Fifth Brewing Company, Threads of Envy, The Tone Factory Recording Studios, Moonshot.com T-shirt Designs, and by Mr. Antenna. Now your host, Jim Tofte.
Michael Shreve is the legendary percussionist who is best known as the original drummer for Santana. He helped create the first 8 albums for the band. At age 19, Michael became the youngest performer at Woodstock, and his drum solo during Soul Sacrifice at Woodstock is just electrifying. That's just part of the story, as Michael has played with the Rolling Stones, George Harrison, Steve Winwood, and many others. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998 and has a new project to talk about, as I've got the great Michael Shreve on the line right now in California.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, great, thank you, and welcome. Congratulations on your new album, Drums of Compassion. We very much like what you do here in Vegas, and this album sounds great. Where does the title come from, first of all?
Well, it's an interesting thing. The piece that you heard is the person giving the incantation on there is known as the man who brought African music to the States. His name was Olatunji. And Olatunji put an album out in 1965 that included a song called Jingo Loba. Now, Santana, on their first album, played that song and called it Jingo, and it made it electric.
Yes.
And it was like, Jingo. And when I was putting this project together, I was reading a piece by the Dalai Lama, and he was saying that now has got to be the time of compassion for humanity. All need to express compassion. So I thought this would be full circle. I'll call it Drums of Compassion, with a nod to Olatunji's record, Drums of Passion, but with a nod to the Dalai Lama as well. And then Olatunji would say this beautiful, like, prayer on the record. His voice sounds so incredible on it. And so that's how the title came about.
I mean, it's a group of virtuosos, yourself included. Is this the type of thing where you could ever assemble everybody to do a live gig or two?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. That'd be very difficult, I think, for some of the people. But it would be interesting to, somebody mentioned today, you know, do a couple of performances and film it and record it. That's a possibility.
Your story has always amazed me because you had the guts to do stuff at a very young age. I mean, asking if you could jam on stage during a Mike Bloomfield super session, I think you were, what, 16 years old at the time?
Yeah. it took a lot of nerve. That's why all my friends laughed at me and said, no, I'm not even going to go.
What training had you had up until that point? Because I always look at the way you hold your sticks, and I'm assuming that there was a lot of jazz in your background?
That's right. That's mainly what I aspired to be, was a jazz drummer.
Yeah.
But I was coming up in the time of, you know, the Fillmore in the Bay Area. So I no longer play that way. I play with match grip now. But I had a lot of training. I had a lot of rudimental training. I had some really great teachers as well. After I left college, I ended up treating the drums like a job. Like, if my parents were gone at 8 o'clock, I was practicing. I was practicing like it was my job from 8 to 5, except at 3 o'clock I had to go to big band. And and then I'd play at night. So I was really, really focused and into it.
I know you've been told this before, but once Carlos Santana discovered you and grabbed you for Santana, playing on Soul Sacrifice really stole the show at Woodstock. Were you just too young to realize how big this moment was?
Perhaps, you know, perhaps. I mean, you know, you don't think about it at all. You know that there's a lot of people, but you don't realize what the lasting impact will be. And so, yeah, for me, half my life I've been trying to get people to listen to stuff I've done other than Woodstock.
I'm right.
So it's a catch-22. There came a point where I just said, you know, just shut up and just be grateful that people appreciated something that you did, and they still appreciate it. So my approach is just like, do whatever you want, because nobody cares.
This put the stamp on the band and the future of the band. The amazing thing is nobody knew who you guys were, right? I mean, you didn't even have an album out yet.
We didn't have a record out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I forget that sometimes, and then realize that that was really the impact that we created there in the moment was really something, especially because nobody was familiar with any of the music. But, you know, the band certainly had a vibe, and it was strong. It was like one big rhythm section.
It was very tribal, and especially to watch that film, for those of us who have watched it many times, you could see what it did to the crowd. We were very excited here in Las Vegas when you reconnected with Carlos for Santana 4. That included Greg Raleigh and Neil Schon. But playing Santana music when you're 20 is a lot different than decades later, right? I mean, did you basically almost have to train for this because it's very intense?
I got with a boxing coach and used that as a method of training. Not that I was boxing, but, you know, the training. I got with a physical therapist. I even had to have an operation on my hand like a month before we were starting. And, it was a big question, should I do it or shouldn't I? And I thought, let's do it. It wasn't a big deal, but it was something. So you're absolutely right. Not only that, but everything's so much louder than it was back then.
Yeah.
Hellacious, louder. And me coming from more of a jazz background, I'm not a big basher. So had to adjust for that sort of thing. I even took a couple of lessons with some really great rock drummers, like Glenn Sobel, who played with Alice Cooper. He's a really good drummer.
Yeah.
And just say, man, how can I play louder? He gave me some tips for, ways to do it. It's different than a jazz drummer. So, yes, it was a very different thing. So, physically, I don't know now even, because that was some years ago. But it's very demanding.
Well, and you guys had a handful of gigs. I believe you were at the House of Blues here. I was expecting you to take it on the road, were you? Because it seemed like this was good for, several dates.
I tell you, Jim, that was a big disappointment. We all thought we were going to go on the road,
Right.
I mean, the fans were ready for it, and it just would have meant a lot to them and to us, and it never happened, and that was a big disappointment. We were ready. I mean, everybody's already did their training. We've done the album, I don't know if it could happen now.
And by the way, before I let you go, your acceptance speech at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998 was the stuff of legend. I could just see and hear how proud you were to be there and how happy you were.
I'm 17 now. I walk into a recording studio in San Mateo, California, trying to hustle free recording time like you usually do. And out comes the original drummer of Santana. The band's recording their first album for CBS, for Clive. They had a big fight, a big falling out. They asked me to sit in, play, and jam. We played all night long. At the end of the night, they said, listen, you want to join the band? I said, let me check my schedule.
I was proud to tell my story because so many people have asked, and I thought, I didn't plan it. I just spit it out. It's a really good story, and my timing was good, and because it really, so many people have asked me, how the hell did you get in that band, with those guys? So I thought, this is a good time to do it, and it's worth telling.
Yeah, I love your story. It's Michael Shreve's latest album, Drums of Compassion. It's out May 24th on Trey Gunn's innovative label, 7D Media. Michael, thanks so much. This was really, really an honor. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks so much, Jim. I appreciate it. Bye.
Of course, Santana is one of the best-selling groups of all time, with over 47 million certified albums sold in the United States and an estimated 100 million sold worldwide. Carlos carries on the tradition with his long-term residency here in Las Vegas, a must-see for anyone who comes to town. Well, that finishes this episode of the Fake Show Podcast. Thanks so much for dropping by. I'm Jim Tofte. I'll see you next time.
Listen to The Fake Show anywhere on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and thefakeshow.com.
Don't turn your back on my baby. You just might pick up my